And as always, welcome back for the 359th installment of the Parish of the Patriot Show. We just keep on, it just goes on and on. I am glad you joined us this week. If you missed last week's show, I want to check it out. Big news out of last week's show. I have changed up the format. If you did miss it, I'll just kind of give you a heads up. I'm done splitting off the Christian-specific segment. We're not doing it that way anymore. We're just jumbling it all together. I think it'll come out better. I think it'll make things more fluid and kind of flow together. You know, it'll probably take me a little bit to work the bugs out, although last week was the first week of doing it, and I think it came out pretty well, if I do say so myself. But yeah, no more segregating it off. Doesn't mean we're not doing Christian-specific content. Au contraire, we just mix it in as I see fit, but we will continue to do it. So don't think that's the best part of the show, in my opinion. So don't think that means I'm not doing that anymore. It just means I feel free to do it whenever and insert it whenever and however I want to, as we go through the entirety of our discussion. If at the end of the day you do get something out of the show and you want to throw something in the plate, I always do appreciate it. We got one and only snail mail. You know the drill. Look on the description page for each show here on Radio Albin, and you can see the snail mail address. And if you don't know how to address an envelope, I don't know what to tell you. I don't have anything for the listener supporter mailbag, so we're going to skip that. It was empty this week, but it's all good. We still keep on going. As is often the case, I'm recording this over the weekend, and we're currently undergoing the big winter storm thing that the media has been hyping. And yeah, for us here in Texas, where I'm at, I've got ice. We got ice with snow on top of it. There's currently sleet/freezing rain coming down. It's miserable. I don't think much of it. This is why I don't live up north, because I can't deal with it. Having this come about, though, things quasi out of the ordinary. I always find it interesting because it gives you that opportunity to observe human behavior, which is really, honestly, quite something. You know, the media hypes this stuff, and you think right about the time you start thinking, well, no one really listens to the media anymore. You know, and I know media viewership, like TV, mainstream media, has really fallen off. But obviously, they still are. I mean, obviously, a significant number of people still do, just judging by their behavior. You know, this weather coming in, you know, is a prime example of that. Because the media hypes this gives them something to go on about. And they've been hyping this and pumping it up that it's going to be this huge, huge deal. And then you watch what people do with the information, you know. I mean, for us here, this is basically, you know, a 3-day weather event. And it's supposed to then clear out and more or less go back to normal. This was 3 days. Plan accordingly. People here don't know how to drive. Well, people everywhere don't drive anymore, period. I always say they're doing a lot of things in their cars, including going from point A to point B, but whatever they're doing in there does not constitute driving for most people. So people can't drive in this weather. It's, you know, this isn't normal. You know, we get like one of these a year in the winter. We'll have about a 3-day weather event with snow and ice, and people just still freak out, you know, like this new deal. They're hyping this thing. And what do they do? And I made a joke to somebody about it, and then turn around and I find out it's true. What is it with the people, like, when this is coming in, like, the day or 2 days before it hits, they run to the store and buy up all the toilet paper? Yes, they do. Why? How much do you plan to wipe your ass in the next 3 days? It's a 3-day weather event. It's not the apocalypse. It's a 3-day weather event, and they always go buy all the toilet paper. I don't understand the obsession. It was the same way with the COVID. Remember that? What is the first thing everybody did? Instead of just saying, I'm not going to wear the mask, I'm not going to stand 6 foot apart, screw you, I'm just going on about my life. They went with those things, but their survival instinct prompted them to go buy toilet paper. I don't get it. I absolutely don't. I don't understand. Now, don't get me wrong. You want to be prepared. I prepared for this. I got my firewood kind of stacked up, brought some firewood inside, you know, just to supplement the regular heat, because heaven knows the electric bill is going to be sky high. You know. But I mean, beyond that, my preparation mainly consisted of, I think Thursday, I made a big, huge batch of chili. And I'm like, well, if we absolutely, you know, if I absolutely can't go to the store or go out to get something to eat, I got chili. I'll be reheating chili. That was my preparation, because it's a three-day weather event. I don't need any more toilet paper because I don't plan to go to the bathroom any more than any other day, any normal day. So I'm not going to need any extra toilet paper. Anyway, that's not going to be the entire show. It's just observations, though. Observations of people. It always gets me thinking and watching how people behave. Because you see groups of people. We observe things on the macro scale. You know, and you have to remember, though, that's a reflection of the collective of individual people's decisions and the way they're behaving. So when you see a group of people acting and behaving in a certain way, that is the average of their behavior. You know, it doesn't matter the group of people. You look and what you wind up taking away. When people make a blanket statement, this group of people does this, or this group of people is like this, they're just surmising, you know, the average. They're just giving you the common denominator of behavior. You know, it doesn't mean every single one of them do that. It just means, on average, your observations notice that this is the tendency of behavior in this group of people. For some reason, these observations have become declared to be socially taboo. They know that you got to love the way in which those who condemn this sort of noticing, they always make the accusation that you're claiming, which no one is, but you're claiming that every individual person in the group does this or tends towards this certain type of behavior. When in reality, that's not what anybody, they're just saying, as a group, on average, you notice this tendency of behavior. And I mean, it doesn't, each group has a different characteristic, you know, and you tend to notice and say, oh, well, those people tend to do this. Nobody's claiming every single one of them do that. But yet, that's one of the ways they try to demonize you and do shut you down. Well, you're claiming every one of them does that, and that's not true. Or they do the other thing, where they will point to an individual who is a member of that group that doesn't do that, and then tries to claim that discredits your point. It's all very silly when you think about it. But you're looking at average group behaviors. And again, it's the sum total of what individuals decide to do. You know, a group of people doesn't exist as a single organism. It means each individual person in the group that you're observing makes decisions and lives a certain way. And those things, when there's commonality, you see that group up and you start, you know, applying the generalization to the group. I think, you know, that makes sense. It's things you observe. And yet, it is curious to me that observing that is considered evil. You know, you get demonized for it, censored, shut down. Now, it's important to point out here, I think, that when I say this, it means all groups, including whatever group you consider yourself to be a part of. That includes you. Everybody falls into some sort of group. You know, there's a group of people collectively with these views or of this race. It depends on what the topic is, you know. And it applies to yourself, too. It applies to me. It applies to you. And I think this is where it's important to remember, because this is where your own individual decisions do matter. You know, because it's easy to look off at the big thing and feel helpless. know, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. What do you do? And I don't like the idea of feeling helpless. I don't like the idea of feeling powerless, because then you just feel like you just give up, you know, give up on everything. You know, you just it can lead to a downward spiral. I'm not big on downward spiraling. But your individual decision is contributing to that. Maybe it's a small part, sure. But your individual decisions and how you live your life do contribute to the overall group average. And if enough, I always say this, if enough individual people make better decisions, then you're going to see a change in a group dynamic and the direction that the group is going in. The reality of this life is that you have control over yourself. You don't have control over other people. Don't get hung up on, okay, but this isn't going to work unless everybody does it, so we have to find a way to make everybody do it. Doesn't work that way. You have control over yourself. I think it's one of the keys to finding a certain amount of peace in your life, is really coming to understand that you only have control over yourself and your own decisions. You cannot make anybody else do anything, live a certain way. And we're not required to do that. It always seems funny to me when people get this idea that somehow you are required to convince everybody. You're required to make everybody see things the way that you see them. Man is given free will. This is an absolute. I believe we use the term, as Christian believers, we use the terms God's laws. You know, you read in the Bible and it, you know, talks about God's laws. What does that mean? You know, is it the Ten Commandments? Is it some esoteric stuff from the Old Testament about observing certain days and holding certain ceremonies or celebrations or feasts on certain days to celebrate this? And I believe God's laws, the way to view them more correctly, is what even a non-believer would refer to as the natural order. The observation that there are rules, that this is a, that we live in a system. And if you work within the parameters and the guidelines of the system, things are going to work out better for you. If you get outside of those, you run into trouble. And one of those fundamental rules of the system is that man has free will. God does not interfere with that. Somebody asked me, I remember, I always wind up, people ask me questions and I'll comment on it. And then later I look back and I'm like, I didn't answer that very well. And I'm never satisfied because I'm never done learning. There are very few things I will ever come to, the point and say, I've got that figured out. I get to the point where I think I'm on my way to figuring it out, but I try never to have the mindset of, that's it. I can check that off the list, put it away, and never look at it again. I think we always have to be willing to go back. Anyway, somebody asked me a while back about Calvinism, you know, and this idea that basically you're just from birth, you're fated to be what you're going to be. And I'm a strong opponent of that mindset because it runs in the face of the fact that man has free will. I think where people get confused is that because God already, he exists outside of time, so he already knows what you're going to do, and he can factor that into his grand design, his plans, that somehow means he's making you do that. And I think it's I think people miss the point. They get confused. You have absolute free will. What you decide to do is, that's all on you. But we're never required to convince other people. You know, and whether it's in religion, politics, whatever the topic is, you have control over yourself, not over others. And when you accept that, you're never going to run out of things to do because you're never done learning. You're never done figuring things out. So you're always working on yourself. it's not as though this has no effect on other people, because if you live your life a certain way, you know, anybody can go out and claim, you know, to hold a certain ideal, certain values, you know. But it's another thing to live that way. That is, you know, another fundamental truth. Jesus said that, you know, by their fruits you will know them. This applies to everything. You know, if a politician, for instance, this is why people get all upset when a politician will spend years marketing himself, because that's what they do. The politicians are marketed like any other product, and they market themselves as the family, Christian family man, and he upholds America's traditional values. He's a true conservative. And then you find out that, you know, he's been running around with hookers or whatever. And, you know, everybody gets upset over it. Because why? Well, because by their fruits you will know them, and you know then that that was a lie. People feel betrayed. Of course, you have to be careful with that too, because everybody struggles with certain things, but politicians generally are all fake and phony. So anyway, maybe not the best example. The point I'm trying to get to, and I'm struggling to do so, admittedly, is that by living your life by the values that you believe in, and the things that you say you believe in, people are watching you. They're not going to walk up and say, hey, I've been watching you and I really like what you're doing. They're not going to say nothing. In fact, sometimes they will argue with you. They will try to challenge you. Some people take offense when that happens, you know. How dare you? I've got all the answers. Instead of looking at it as a chance to challenge themselves. If somebody says, well, I don't believe that because I think this. Do you have an answer to that? Or maybe they're right. The hardest things to do is to have the mindset to be able to say, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but let me think about that a while. You may have a point. Let me think about that. What do you care? But they, you know, oh my gosh, but if you do that, that person might go away and think you're an idiot that don't know what you're doing. Why do you care what they think? It doesn't matter. It may be somebody you're never even going to see again. Why do you care? Do you know, people are watching you. And if you live a certain way, people will take notice of that. And then later on, they may say, you know what? I think that guy's right. And they may start living more that way. So in other words, you can, while you only have control over yourself. I guess this is the distinction I was finally getting around to making. You only have control over yourself and your own decisions. But note the word control. You do have influence over other people. And you don't have to go out of your way to do it. People you work with, people you know, your family members, whatever. Friends, you influence them. They're not going to tell you that. They're going to say, man, you've been such an influence on me. But you do. Even if they themselves wouldn't acknowledge it, they do observe. People do observe how you live. Whether you strive to live the way that you say you strive to live. This influences people. And so you do have influence, and it can influence them to maybe try to change their own lives and their own individual decisions and their own individual behaviors. But at the end of the day, you do only have control of yourself. Accepting that is going to bring you a whole lot more peace. It's going to make life a lot more bearable. I mean, think about, how many times have you heard or read people on the internet on a tirade, you know? If everybody would just... What they mean, whenever you read somebody or hear somebody say, if everybody would just, what they mean a lot of times, 9 times out of 10, what they actually mean is, if I had a way to make everybody do this, if I could make them do this, then everything would be fine. You only have control over yourself. Live your life. Do the best you can. If you feel like you need to do more to improve yourself, your own lot in life. Learn more, gain wisdom, more knowledge, more understanding. These are things you can do. If you're frustrated and unhappy, then work harder on yourself. Don't work harder beating yourself against the wall trying to convince people or make them do what you want them to do, because you're never going to get anywhere with that. Oh, gosh. We've got this. You know, it is basically election year stuff, and we're getting these campaign ads now on the TV, and you know how... You know what we do? You know, Jim Johnson, he's a real conservative. He represents Texas Vice. And it's always real funny when these guys are already, you know, they're incumbents running for re-election. And like, you're just supposed to forget the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years they've been in office and they've sucked. But all of a sudden they're running for re-election and he's a real conservative. He stands for your values. He's a family man and loves Jesus. He's just supposed to forget. Or if he's the opponent running against the incumbent. Yeah, same thing. He's going to do it differently. Again, you're not supposed to remember that when the guy he's running against was running, he was the guy that was going to do it differently. And now he's got a challenger because he didn't do it differently. And if this guy gets in, guess what? He's not going to do it. He's not going to do it differently either. Like the saying goes, and I don't know who to attribute the quote to, and I'm too lazy to look it up. You know, no matter who you vote for, you get John McCain. It's like that. Yeah, a lot of people have been talking recently about, you know, Ted Cruz and what a meme he is. But a lot of people forget he was one of the Tea Party candidates when that was a thing. And for those of you who are too young to remember, the Tea Party was one of those up and coming, you know, we're going to change America. You know, it's like right now it's a, you know, the America First type of thing, you know, America First, it's America First movement. And I'm talking generally speaking here. There's a lot of people who say, well, my view is America First. The Tea Party is like a precursor to that. And a bunch of people got voted in on the Tea Party. They were a Tea Party candidate, which meant they were going to go up there and change Washington, cut spending, uphold our values. Ted Cruz was one of those Tea Party candidates that got in there. And look at this guy. Forget Tea Parties, Likud. I mean, he's no matter who you vote for, you get John McCain. I mean, you get more of the same. I don't know. Talking about that, you know, it is election season. You know, he's a real, and we have this competing thing now because, you know, the whole Trump thing, you know, it makes everything different. Because now, which, you know, he's a MAGA Republican. He supports President Trump. I'm not sure that's, I'm thinking that's becoming less and less of a thing to run on, but they're still going with it. He's a real MAGA. He supports President Trump. His opponent, the incumbent, voted against Donald Trump 5 times. He sides with the Democrats. Real conservative values. I was thinking of it because I saw one of these campaign ads talking about real conservative. He's a real conservative. He has real conservative values. I've been hearing about conservative values, conservative principles for a long time, obviously. And I was thinking the other day when I seen one of these mundane cookie cutter, because all these political commercials are the same. And all of the candidates are the same. They all stand for never defined conservative values. There's a talk about ridiculous stuff. Because like I say, I'm here in Texas, so everything is geared towards Team R here. And I've seen several political ads for several political candidates. And they're running on this no Sharia law in Texas. He's a real conservative. He stands for conservative values. He stands with Donald Trump and opposes Sharia law in Texas. It's like, Sharia law in Texas? What? I mean, like, if you didn't know anybody, if you lived under a rock and you saw these commercials, you would think that we live under, there's a real push to enact Sharia law. I'm not sure Sharia law would be worse than what we have, but nevertheless, I don't want to get off into those weeds right now. He stands against Sharia law. Sharia law? What? That's not even, this is just like, it's like if you walked over to your neighbor and told him, hey, don't worry, I'm against people lighting your yard on fire. And they would be looking at you like, what? Who's lighting my yard on fire? What are you even talking about? Don't worry, I've got your back. Against people who want to set your yard on fire. They would be like, but nobody's setting my yard on fire. Are you planning to set my yard on fire? Why are you even bringing this up? And that's my reaction. He's against Sharia law in Texas. Who's doing that? I mean, I don't know anybody claiming to do that. I haven't heard of Muslims demanding Sharia law in Texas. What the hell are you on? What are you even on about? And if there's one thing we do know about conservatives, if you did wake up one day and the evil Democrats suddenly had Sharia law passed in Texas, within 6 months to a year, those would be Sharia law, would be a part of conservative values. I've seen a lifetime of conservative talk about conservative values, conservative principles, conservative. He's a real conservative. And, you know, out of so many years of hearing about that, if you asked me what those things are, I could not tell you, because over my lifetime, those things have changed. They're not principles, you know. I mean, because principles are something, you know, fundamental. You know, you can change things on the edges as you gain more information. That's fine. But something that is a principle, something you truly believe in, you know, that core is something that doesn't change. Now, I don't really like the idea of applying those things to politics, because politics is fake and gay. But, you know, for instance, I'm a Christian believer. I believe Jesus Christ, the Son of God, 3 days, you know, was crucified, 3 days later, raised from the dead. You know, that is something I'm uncompromising on. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, I hate people that don't believe that. That would be silly. And it doesn't mean I feel the urge to go out and insult somebody else's religion because it's different than my own. I don't really care about what they believe in. But for me, a fundamental principle, that is a principle. That's something I'm not going to compromise on. You know, if you're going to come up to me and talk about, you know, whatever, I mean, I'll let you talk. Whatever, but you're not going to change that. That is a principle. What the hell do conservatives believe in? You know, I mean, you really would. What are these so-called conservative principles? Because over my lifetime, they always change. They walk around. I remember, you know, back, say, I don't know, early 2000s. Maybe late 90s, right around Y2K. You know, a fundamental conservative principle was being against gay marriage. How many politicians are still in there, Republicans? And they're like, you know, if you could go back in the time machine and look, he stands against gay marriage. And now they're up there like, you know, we support our homosexual community's fundamental constitutional right for gay marriage. They change, they shift, they don't have any, actually, they can't tell you what their principles are. And even if they try, it may not be that in 6 months, much less 5-10 years from now. He's a real conservative. He opposes Sharia law in Texas. Sharia law in Texas. Okay, I didn't know that was a thing. Talking about group behaviors and applying, you know, individual decisions, group behaviors. You look at like the lifespan of the country. And it's an example because America post-World War II, the U.S. post-World War II, you know, had a boom period, the 50s, 60s, even into the 70s, though that started getting malaise. The 80s were so-so and so on and so forth. And you see this spread out. But the 50s and 60s were a boom time. There was prosperity, and understandably so. Post-World War II, all of the industrial economies of the world were basically destroyed by the war, so America had a monopoly on that. America at that time was in the same position, much like what China is today, having more or less a monopoly on manufacturing, actually building thing capabilities. Of course, obviously, contrast that to today, where the entire U.S. economy is essentially various forms of financial scams. People are finding a way to move numbers around and steal money or create money or just various scams, money scams. People running different money scams, gambling. Well, economy is some form of gambling. We don't hardly actually make anything. We do, but not much. China's taking that role over. But anyway, back in the 50s and 60s, what a boom economically. People were upward mobile. People were moving up, and you had prosperity. Now, as with our individual lives, these are the times to be on your guard. It is amazing to me. Because Christian believers, I think, you know, nobody naturally wants hard times. I mean, that's just human nature. I don't either. I want my life to be nice and smooth sailing. It doesn't work that way all the time, but that's what we desire. That's what we work and strive for. But yet, you have different things that try your faith. And a lot of people, I think, have, especially believers, have this mindset like, you know, the real trouble comes. The real trial to your faith comes during these times, you know, of turmoil. You know, strife, when there's just upheaval and you don't know what to do, that's when your faith is really going to be tried. Most people probably have that mindset. You know, and they'll talk about, you know, having to have the faith in these times of trouble. Things are tumultuous. There's chaos everywhere. We gotta cling to our faith. This is where our faith is going to be tempted and trialed. And I don't think that's correct. I mean, yes, there is a certain form of testing of your faith during those times. That's true. But that is not the real place to be worried about. The real times when you need to be on your guard for your faith is during times of prosperity. That's reflected again. This goes back to what I was saying about group behavior is just the sum average of individual decisions. In the 50s and 60s, America had a boom. What is the 1960s particularly most well known for in this country? If you said, what's a decade that sounded the best, you know, that was the signpost to things decaying and falling apart? And most people would point to the 1960s and all the crap that went on in the 1960s. And what else was going on? It was actually a very good time economically. So that applies to your individual life. The time to be on guard to protect your faith and make sure your faith isn't, you're not losing the plot, you're not putting God in the back seat, is not when things are troublesome. That's a different sort of trial. It's when things are good. That is the time when your faith is most vulnerable. I 100% believe this. You're a Christian believer. I 100% believe your faith is most vulnerable when you got it good. You got plenty of money in the bank. Everything's quiet. You live in a peaceful, happy life. You like where you live. I mean, everything's good. That's the time to be on guard. Because that's the time when it's real easy to forget about God. Put God in, you know, back there somewhere. You know, you might go to church a couple times a year, whatever. You think about God at Christmas or Easter maybe, and that's it. The rest of the time, you're too busy. That's the time to be on your... That's why it's written, wisdom is found in the house of mourning. It's you're going to have a tendency when things are hard to gravitate towards your faith. But foolishness is found in the house of feasting or the house of laughter. Why? Because when times are good, who needs God? You know, everything's good. I don't need to think about God now. When things are bad, that tends to be where you fall back to. It works the same for societies because it's group behavior, it's individual decisions, and you're looking at the sum whole. And this goes back to what I started at the beginning of the show. It's individual decisions, and you're looking at the sum total. Economically, the 1960s were great. People were doing well. And that's also the turning point when they turned against God. They turned away from God. They started believing all of this nonsense. You know, they started abandoning God out of their lives. They didn't need God anymore because things are good. You know, let the good times roll. And of course, this always leads to downfall because you get out decadence. Iniquity always gets you outside of the parameters of the system, and you start violating God's laws, and things go badly. You know, it just is. It's so predictable, and it's so well documented all throughout history. And of course, people in their arrogance always have this, it's different now. You know, how many times you hear people say that specifically, or at least heavily implied? When you point out, well, this isn't going to turn out well, they'll say something along the lines, but it's different now. But it's not. People are still people. We have more gadgets, more distractions, more heaven knows, more propaganda. But people are still people. So it's not different now. And what are societies if not just simply groups of people? And if the individual human being is basically the same as he's always been, for the most part, the same thing applies. It's not different now. A godless people are the easiest to manipulate because human nature is to have some authority. You know, if your authority is the ultimate authority is the Lord, then you have that anchoring you. You have that granted. And you can question, you know, if the government comes down with some ridiculous diktat, you're going to question that because in your mind, God is the ultimate authority. God is the ultimate authority. So the government authority is very much down the list from that of the Lord. So you question those things. But you see, for godless people, because human nature is to look for God. Even the most, I've said this before, even the most hardcore atheist, give me a few minutes of reading their material, listening to them speak. If I can bear it, and I'll figure out what their God is. They won't ever admit that's a God to them, but everybody has one. It's just human nature. You're going to make a God. Maybe it's the science. Maybe it's Darwin. Maybe it's something else. One of the most sought after gods in this world is money. But everybody will tend to have. So a godless people are easy to manipulate because if the Lord isn't your ultimate authority, what's probably going to be next in line? The government or maybe a politician. That's how you wind up with messianic figures. That's why I talk about this. You know how the whole Trump thing for a certain group of people is very much turned into a cult. It really has. This something that started off with, you know, an idea, a direction they want the country to go to. And you see this guy has turned against all of that, virtually all of it. And these people are still worshiping him like he's a second come, you know, he's a messiah. I said, that's a cult. When you're unable to question the leader, when you set a figure at the front, and it doesn't matter what he does, he's always right. You see, it's a false god. The Lord is always right. That's God, not Donald Trump or any other politician or whatever a person's false god is. People will seek authority. So when you have a godless people, and again, we're talking on average, the group is a godless people. They're easy to manipulate. You just got to give them what they're seeking. Got to find that narrative. I think that's the way a lot of this two-party, uniparty, you know, narrative in here in the U.S., you know, it works. They give the godless leftists, you know, what they want. Diversity, alphabet stuff, whatever. Disguise, you know, sin dressed up as freedom. And for the other side, they give them, you know, a figure like Donald Trump. For both sides, it's some sort of holy war. but it's all godlessness. You know, talking about that, I really was thinking the other day, they got that horrible World Economic Forum thing going, and they continue really pushing this AI thing. And I was thinking about, you know, I saw a clip, and that one guy, I don't remember his name off the top of my head. He's been there for a while, and he really pushes the AI stuff. And I was watching a clip of this guy talking about AI, and he put this, they had a big screen behind him, and he was talking about AI, and it said, we can reach a point where AI says, I think, therefore, I am. It's a blasphemy, if you know your Old Testament, by the way. I am. And that really struck me that the reason they're rolling this out is this is another alternative God they're going to present to people. And perhaps some of these people really do view it as a form of God. You know, as they do think, how do I want to put this? The AI you're seeing today, this is what I think. This is my opinion. I have proof of it, but I think logically speaking, it makes sense. Do you ever wonder why all of a sudden they're rolling this out? You know, just over the past, what was it, 4 or 5 years or whatever, you know, they introduced AI. Why? Why at this time? And everybody, they felt a need to roll it out at this time for a reason. In other words, the AI they're letting you have, you know, ChatGPT, whatever, all of these different AIs that the public has access to. And it's making, everybody's amazed. They're saying, you know, AI is advancing. And this guy was making this point. And all these demonic people keep making this point. AI is advancing at a remarkable rate. You know, and people see this, you know, with the AI they have access to. It's advancing at a remarkable rate. It almost seems scary. How much? It's not. If they rolled AI out to the public, say 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was, then that means they've had it for who knows how long. You know, who knows how long they've had it. It just means that now they've decided to normalize it in the mindset of the people. So they roll out a rudimentary version for the public and claim it's a new thing. You know, sure, I guess you could say it's as me going off into conspiracy theory land, but it's reasonable. It's reasonable to come to this assumption. Why now? For whatever reason, they've decided to introduce this into the public consciousness. So, of course, you're seeing great advancements in AI because what they've been having for whatever how long is way more advanced than what you've got. So they give you a rudimentary version. With every update, it miraculously gets amazingly better. Well, of course, because they're showing you, basically, they're giving you some sort of thing that's so bare bones that they can just add a little to it and you're just blown away and amazed. But if I'm right, and I think I am, that they've had AI for a long time, and now whatever for whatever reason they've decided to roll this out at this time, there's a reason they're rolling it out at this time. And when you look at the marketing and the way they keep presenting it, they're really pushing it as like a godlike existence. I think it's Albania now has a AI minister. They said this is going to be the way to fight corruption. You're just going to turn it over to the AI because it can't be corrupted, which I'm not going to get off into why you should assume that. What they tell you that, you know, they rolled out this AI AI minister. And again, I think it was in Albania, if I remember correctly. And their justification was, well, corruption is so bad, the AI can't be corrupted. Now, they make a statement like that. Remember, you're dealing with liars. They make a statement like that. But how do we know this? What do you mean the AI can't be corrupted? Says who? By the way, y'all have no idea how smooth that previous statement just was. Because in the middle of that, I spilled my coffee all over myself. And you didn't even know. You wouldn't know if I didn't tell you. The AI can't be corrupted. that's a blanket statement. How do we know this? Oh, because these liars are telling you this. They're rolling this AI out. They're rolling it out now for a reason. And when you... I think that guy's name is Harari, off the top of my head. It's from Israel. Imagine that. I think they're gearing up. This is going to be another alternative false god to present to the people. When you look at the endemic corruption in the system, we are at the point where it can't be denied anymore. The corruption is, in all of the democracy systems, is now so in your face that it can't be hand-waved away anymore. You know, it just... You can do so much with propaganda, media manipulation, but it becomes so endemic and to the point to where it's just common knowledge. Well, they're going to have something to replace it. You know, they're going to have a plan B, because the democracy system is what enables the power structure that we currently have. So they're going to have to substitute it with something else. And you think about it, you say, well, we just replace the system with AI. We'll replace the politicians with AI because it can't be corrupted, according to them. You can bet on whatever alternative you're offered, is there, it's going to protect the current power structure. I mean, they'll shuffle around the decorations, but at the end of the day, you're going to get the continued oligarchy that you have now. They just, like I say, they just put up the different, they'll rearrange the furniture, they'll paint the walls a different color and tell you it's a different house, but you're going to be in the same house. Of course, thinking along these lines, this is kind of a snapshot, by the way, if you care, of the way I think about things. You know, you just keep thinking, yeah, but what if this, what if that? If it's reasonable that they've had AI for a long time and they're just now introducing it into the public consciousness now for a reason, they're going to bring something else forward and they're going to have this in place to explain it so that people are ready to accept it. What if the AI that they have access to is so advanced that they themselves view it as a god, like unironically? You know what I mean? Presenting it and want the people to basically, this will give them another false god to chase after. But what if they themselves actually view it as a god? And what is it? I mean, we know for the most part what these AIs are that the people are playing around with and how they work, generally speaking. But what about the one they have? And again, it's just theory because they're not going to tell us. But I do believe it's reasonable. Let's flip that around, look at it a different way before we go to the next thing. if I'm wrong, then that means they suddenly came up with this amazing AI thing and their first reaction was give it to the people. Does that sound like what they would do? Does their track record of the way they do things resemble that in any way, shape, or form? Does that sound real? Have they ever behaved that way? So then we can infer from the fact that we know the obvious answer to that, that more than likely they've had something for a while. So what is it? I mean, again, I'm not talking about the AI you can use. We pretty much know how that works. But what about what they have? Like I say, this is kind of the way I think about things. And I can walk away with shrugging my shoulders and go, well, I don't know the answer. But it's interesting to think about it. In other words, maybe it's advanced enough that it's not just a computer. Maybe they're communicating with other entities, as it were. It's sort of like this. Again, you don't know, but you do know what you do know. For instance, I don't know what they're doing with CERN, you know, the particle collider thing that they've spent billions of dollars on. What I do know is they didn't spend billions of dollars because they're really curious about the Big Bang Theory and the beginning of the universe. That isn't it. We can speculate on what they're actually doing with it and what the actual purpose of it is. But the idea that just out of simple curiosity, they've spent billions of dollars and undergoing this massive undertaking because they want to sling some particles around, it's going to give them a clue about physics or the beginning of the universe. It's not simple curiosity. We can speculate, but that's all it is. But we do know that the actual thing they're telling us is a lie. Same thing with this AI thing. I think it's reasonable they have something way more advanced. They've had it for a long time. They have made the decision that it's time to get it into the public consciousness. So when the next thing comes, people are already used to the idea. Does that make sense? They're already used to the idea and because it's already been introduced to them. You got to ease people into things. You have to ease them into that. That's why they give you these different narratives. So that when it happens, they do want a shock effect, but it can't be too shocking because then people might question it. They have to ease things into the public mind and then get to that end goal because they just jump to it. People might stop, they might hesitate. As Christian believers, we always have to come back to what are we here for? We look at all of these things going on before you get too bogged down in it. Always remember, you know what your job is. God has made it very clear. We're gaining wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of the Lord. That we're spiritually maturing, so we're ready for the kingdom of God. You come back to that. As long as you're doing that, everything else is going to work out. I'm not saying the world may still go to hell in a handbasket. Everything is going to work out. As long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Again, you only have control over yourself. We need to do more. Whenever you hear somebody talking about, or I read an article and somebody's talking about the state, of the crumbling U.S. empire, and people, try to assign collective blame. It's our fault. We, the people, if you just allowed this, we don't have control over what anyone else does. You have control over yourself. Somebody trying to claim otherwise is just leading you to a path of frustration. We come back around to, you know what you're supposed to do. Get back on mission. And there's the thing about that. You're not going to fall for any of this ridiculous BS. If you stay on point, and let's say hypothetically, they do basically more and more people become enslaved religiously. They present AI more and more advanced. And again, I'm just using this as an example. More and more advanced to the point that people basically worship it. It gets presented as a form of a god. And again, I'm not saying that's what they're going to do. But if that happens, if you're on point, you're not going to have to worry about sitting around and deciding, was this real? Is this correct? Is it a trick? You're going to know because you're on point. You know that the Lord is the ultimate authority. You're not going to fall for that nonsense. You see what I'm saying? Society has gotten to where it is because of the average collective decisions of the people in that society. Yes, they get deceived. Yes, people tell them lies. This is reflective of how it works with an individual person. It's reflected society-wide. But you have a decision. You have a choice to make. What are you going to do? You look at all of the BS that has been pushed in Western society over the decades. Go back to the 1960s. And things were great. And all of the degeneracy that was pushed, the people decided to go along with that. You look at anything that you disagree with the society, and there's a lot to disagree with. We're at clown world stage, obviously. But at any point, the people collectively could have refused to go along with it. The problem is collectively people went along with it. I'm not saying it's your fault. More than likely, you weren't around for it when it first started getting pushed. You see what I'm saying? The people collectively decided to turn away from God, that they discarded God. They don't need God anymore. They got this new thing. That's why I say temptation, the real time to be on guard is when things are good. They got convinced that, heck yeah, we don't need all that stodgy stuff. Let's go. Hell, we can roll around in the mud and screw while we smoke dope or whatever. The people choose to do it. It works on an individual. It works on a society. The two are reflective, one of the other. And you wind up where you're at. But you're not powerless because, again, you can decide for yourself not to. You know, you keep your heart. So we have a mission. You know, it's a simple thing. You know, he has made this not complicated. You know, it's one of those things that if you read the Bible long enough, you people sometimes think as a contradiction. On the one hand, we're told this is, you know, the hard path, the winding, narrow path that most people aren't on, which is true. But Jesus told us that, you know, his burden is light, his load is easy, which sounds like, which is also true, by the way, but it sounds on its face like a contradiction. But it's not. It's a narrow and difficult path because the rest of the world is on the highway to hell. Cue the AC/DC song. They're on the highway to hell, and they're looking at you like you're crazy because you're not on the highway to hell. They're chasing the latest thing. They're chasing the latest whatever. Latest false god that's been presented to you, and there's this is always going to result in social pressure to go along with the group. That's how we tend to be. We want to go along with the group. We want to be accepted by the group. This is why it's a fundamental thing not to, for a Christian believer, not to seek the approval of men. Not because you don't want men's approval, but because that's how social pressure is exerted. Social pressure is exerted. We naturally, by our very nature, want to be a part of the in-group. That's what makes it a difficult path. His burden is light, and it's easy because he didn't make this complicated. This is not what we have to do, what we do, the way we live our lives. It's not complicated. We have our Bibles, you pray, you seek God, you put him at the forefront of your life. You seek wisdom, knowledge, and understanding in the Lord. That is it. And it's an ongoing process in the little bit of time you have. You put the effort in and you slowly make progress in this and spiritually mature. A baby's not ready to be born after it's been in the womb 4 weeks. It has to be in there 9 months. So there's a growing process. It's the same for us spiritually. So we go through the process, but it's a simple process. You know what you need to be doing. You get off in the woods worrying about everybody else and trying to do things that you can't do. You can sit there and say, oh, you're wrong. You can do what you can do. You have control over yourself. You're not going to make other people do anything. Again, the burden is light because he made this, intentionally made this fairly simple to understand. It's... The intricacy, the details are interesting. That's what gives us lots of things to talk about when it comes to things of the Christian nature. But the fundamental underlying mission we have that God had when he first set out and created the first man is unchanged. And it's not complicated. This is really not. I can, you know, We talk about it virtually every week. It's such a simple thing. You can lay it out in just a few minutes. And the best you can do is come back to doing that. And if enough people do that, you're going to see a change. But what if they don't? Then things are going to go to hell in a handbasket. And that's, I'll be honest, that's where they're headed. These are literally the end days, and I'm not one of those evangelical rapture-believing idiots, but while Jesus said you don't know the day and the hour, he did also say, just like you know when fall is coming, you know when you're getting close, and you look at the insanity coupled with, you know, because society's empires crumble all throughout history, that's not new, but when you couple that with the narratives and more specifically the technology that is present now. You look at these things as a whole, and we are in literally biblical end days here. We do know, we still don't know the day or the hour, but we're literally in end days. You need, this is the most important time to stay on point. Again, most people aren't. Yeah, you're going to see things go to absolute hell. You know, and nothing you can do is probably going to change that, but you, this is why you've got to stay on point. I tell you, you're better off doing what you can. You know, trying to run around and worry about everybody else. It's just going to be frustrating. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. We could keep going, but we're not. An hour is about as long as I can go anyway. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you got something out of it. Hope you're enjoying the new way I'm going about it instead of having, you know, the Christian stuff segregated off. It just, as I said last week, it makes it where there's no flow. You know, like we talk about this and then, okay, we're switching over to this. This way we can kind of interweave things together. I like it the way I'm going to do it. So I hope you enjoy it too. And if you did, hopefully we'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.